You're listening to the Something Beautiful podcast. I'm Jonathan Blundell. Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Something Beautiful podcast, somethingbeautifulpodcast.com. This week on the episode, we talk photography. Beautiful photography with photographer and community journalist Don Johnson. He tweets at East Texas Photo, and he also blogs at 175and20.blogspot.com.
Right, 175 and 20 are two of the major highways that go through Kaufman County, which is where I live most of my life, even though I technically live outside in Dallas County. And within the corridors of those two highways is a lot of interesting people and a lot of interesting happenings. So that's where my people are, and that's where I get to talk about.
So why photography?
I've always been a photographer since high school and everything else, so it's kind of natural that that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a journalist coming out of high school. And then realized that maybe I needed to experience some more life. And long story short, it wasn't until 2007 I bought a nice digital SLR camera and started learning quickly, because you can with digital. If there's any advantage, it's the learning curve gets so much shorter. And 2009, I went to work for, had the opportunity to work for Michael Gresham at the Tribune. He took me on, even though I didn't really know what I was doing. And very quickly, kind of figured out the ropes of journalism. I had the mind for it, but you develop the skills pretty quickly, because there's so many varied things that you have to do, writing and photography-wise. So it came along pretty quickly, and community journalism is still a good thing to do, and a good place to be, and I left that 3 years later, so there's a lot to that, but
I understand.
Personal life changes as well as careers.
Yes, for some reason, personal life tends to get in the way of journalism, or journalism gets in the way of personal life. So you really have to decide, I think, which is your preferred route.
That's exactly right, because, and I was warned of this, we had some friends move down to Salado. We went to a July 4th event with them down there, and there was a photographer running around, and it was right at that decision point of me leaving my former job as a computer rental salesman, of all things. Made good money there. But I was talking to this guy, just a random guy, shooting a July 4th event, and I said, you know, what's the upside and the downside, because I'm going to do this. And he said, it's July 4th, and you're with your family, and I'm not. And, you know, just in one sentence, he told me exactly what I would be facing there. And so we ran into that a lot. Over 3 years at the Tribune was the life of covering other people's events takes over from your own. So it really is a lifetime commitment sort of thing, or a lifestyle commitment.
Right. And so after those 3 years, you had a life change.
Well, a couple years into that, we had a son, and that changes everything, as you know better than I do. And the opportunity to stay home and work essentially part-time and be a photographer was there, and the money difference is not as much as you might think. For an entry-level journalist, is not a family-supporting type pay scale. So, it's been a great... he'll be three next month, so it's been a great couple of years of being at home with Joshua as he grows up, and now it's probably time to go make more money to pay for that stinking childhood stuff.
Now, Don graduated high school and spent a semester at Texas Christian University shooting photos for the school newspaper, both in high school and in college. And after that semester in college, he realized that it wasn't quite the right fit for him at the moment. So he left school to play in a band and then joined the workforce quickly after realizing the band wasn't going to pay the bills. So he worked in sales for a number of years before returning to his creative passion for photography.
I've done sales as a career, part of my previous life career. And it really is, the art of sales is more important than any other art if that's going to be your business. And I could sell to people a service or something that they want. It is very hard to push yourself on people. And so I was just thinking about this. I heard on Accidental Creative, if you're a fan of that, a Steve Martin quote of, and somebody wrote a book title now too called Be So Good They Can't Ignore You. And so that's really good, except that people can still ignore you when you're really good. And I'm not really good yet, I don't think, but you strive for that, but you can also be so in front of their face all the time that they can't ignore you. So I mean, there's a business side of that,
right,
that really goes along with being a creative, that people ignore or fail at a creative business because of, and that's a fear of mine. That's, I think everybody's fear in creative arts. I've got to make this happen, and I'm focusing it on the wrong avenues or focusing on the wrong part of it, and it's like the constant struggle that I never really thought about. I knew about because I'd heard people talk about, but you don't really experience it until you get out there and go, holy cow, these people haven't paid in 60 days. How do I get my money out of them? Or, the business plan for next month is not coming through. So, you know, what do you do? The business aspect of it, and that's what I finally went back to school for, was shout out to Laterno, one night a week, 6 years, you can do it. But that's kind of where that went. And so, yeah, I've been a photographer my whole life, really. But it wasn't until recently, 2007, 2008, that I really took the passion to become better at it and see things differently. I just got finished teaching kids at 4-H Club. And it's like the opportunity to do things like that is as valuable as anything else, because you're actually... the feel goods come in there, but trying to tell kids how to take pictures wasn't nearly as fun as telling them, by the way, at the beginning of the meeting, they learned how to do kind of Robert's Rules of Order stuff. They were making motions and they were doing old business and new business and all these like business meeting things. And I'm like, okay, you can learn how to take good pictures. The other stuff you're learning here is actually going to be stuff you use to run the world. Okay, so don't forget that. You know, it's like, why did I not learn all that stuff when I was a kid?
So I was curious, as someone who learned on an analog camera and shooting on an analog camera, and then coming back a number of years later, what changed the most since shooting analog photos in high school and then coming back to photography with digital SLRs and all the digital equipment we have now?
The biggest thing was not, I mean, the camera controls are all exactly the same, but you immediately know what you're doing or doing wrong, as the case may be. And so the change was the cameras are the big change, but the internet, of course, was the other big change, because all the information, strobist.com, all these resources that people have put out there to learn in a week what would have taken you months and months to figure out what you were doing. That's just insanely different than, say, mid-90s when I was in high school trying to learn photography, shooting on the sidelines of, I didn't know how bad the light was in Kemp, Texas football stadium, you know. Now I go back and say, how did I even make any pictures back then, you know? Or you look at the work of the people back in the 50s, 60s shooting manual focus cameras, and they're getting these absolutely amazing shots for Sports Illustrated going, I'm pretty sure I couldn't do that, you know, without the help of the camera. But you got to remember that the technology is a little bit of a upside and a downside. Photography itself, obviously, I mean, the fact that everybody has a camera, the fact that I was just talking to a group of 8 to 16-year-olds, that when I asked them, do you have something, a device that takes pictures, every one of them did. 8-year-olds with, you know, iPhones or iPods are taking pictures and video. So sheer availability and access to great technology for every age and every, you know. I heard somebody say that the iPad, you know, iPad is not a camera thing on the web, right? But for people my parents' age, it's the best camera ever because it's the biggest screen you can get, right? Technology is access. And so you have every bit of the ability to learn, the ability to take pictures, the ability to share them with the world. The other thing, I was just, anytime I talk to kids about this stuff, is everybody's a journalist now. It changed journalism entirely. If you're posting something on Facebook, you're a journalist because that's where people go to get information. If you are putting pictures on Instagram, that you know you're okay. You might be taking pictures of your food and nobody cares. Fine, I do that all the time. But you're also sharing some information about the world around you for other people. So that's the other big thing. The ability to learn, the ability to share it so quickly. And of course the business side of it. I don't shoot anything anymore that doesn't include the digital files, which I think pisses off some established photographers because they're still based in a model where you're selling prints. It's a different age and a different time, so you have to charge differently and everything else, and people are not adapting to that, but everybody will eventually, right? It's funny, I have a friend who was a photographer in the 70s, 80s, old guy, oldish guy, no offense, old guys, but he was talking about,
they're probably not listening to a podcast.
Well, he was telling me one of the sales tactics they would use is, and he was a portrait photographer in a, I don't think they were like a mall, but studio. And so they would have people come back in to view their proofs, and they would print 8x10s. They'd print a 16 by whatever. And would you like to buy any 8x10s? Here's one. Look at this. It's your family. It's beautiful. But no, we're not really interested in an 8x10 for $25 or $30 to $50, whatever it is. And they just rip that thing apart and throw it in the trash can. I can't even imagine doing that to anybody's picture. It's somebody's family. There's a picture. You printed it. It's not worthless. But attaching the value to the ownership of the copyright and everything else, it's just a different idea than we have now where, you know, the pictures you've taken exist. They're accessible some way or another and should be. And so I completely agree with copyright ownership to the extent that, you know, you've created some piece of art, whatever, and there's a value there that needs to be, you know, purchased. But to not include those images for me, just from a customer service standpoint, you've captured these moments and then what do you do with them? Well, they're going to sit on my hard drive, or I'm going to give them to whoever paid for them. It's not something I can say, I'm just going to erase all these images. It might be something that you want in 100 years. Sure, your kids may want these, whatever. But I'm not gonna erase those images forever. No.
Yeah.
Why do that?
Right.
The technology exists to hold them.
So along with technology, we have the ability to snap photos on our phones, on our iPads, on all these different devices. We share them quickly on services like Facebook and Instagram. But what really makes a photo good other than a couple hundred likes on Instagram or another service?
There are things, I'm going to keep going because it's fresh in my mind because I talk to these kids at night. I tell them the five things that I look for in a picture before I take the picture, right? Doesn't matter which camera you own, doesn't matter what sort of situation you're in, you have to have a good identifiable subject, unless you're doing fine art or some weird stuff. Identifiable subject, good light or interesting light, layers of story in the picture, you know, foreground, background, what are they saying about the subject, angle, which can either be physical angle, up or down, something interesting, not just boring, or an angle as far as what the story is saying is also an angle, the theoretical angle, and then a moment. A photographer's looking for 3 out of 5 in that. So, I don't know, anybody can come along and take that picture on accident, but to be a professional, you want to be able to do that consistently, and that's sort of where that comes in. Well, you can have 1 out of 5 and have it a great photo because the value of a picture is subjective to anybody.
Right.
I sold a picture, you know, I do sports, high school sports a lot. Sold a picture of the back of a kid running down the football field. He has the ball, but you can't see the ball. You can't see his face. There's people blocking a lot of his body, but he's running away from the camera. And I don't even know, on a normal day, I would not have even put that picture up. I guess because he was running for a touchdown. He ran the long score in. and terrible picture. It was in focus. I'll give it that. And sure enough, the mom, I think that may have been the only touchdown that kid scored all year. The mom bought that picture because the value of it to her had nothing to do with whether it was a good picture or not. So, as photographers and artists or whatever you want to classify yourself as, we look at the value of things through the sort of perfect world. You know, yes, I would like for it to have a subject and good light and good layers of story, and you can have this perfect picture that means nothing to anybody because it has no punch or no emotional impact, and this terrible picture of the kid running down the sidelines for a football score to that mom meant, you know, everything. And yeah, she bought it. So there are some qualities there that have nothing to do with a good picture that give it value, just who's in it. You know, I have a picture of my son, it's terrible. Well, guess what, it's my son, so it's the most precious picture in the world. But there are measures of sort of, you know, the really good recognized photographers can tear apart a portfolio. There's nothing more fun as a photographer than go to sportshooter.com. anybody out there, sports shooter folks, go to the section of the website where they critique student portfolios and listen to these really top photographers who, you know, have done amazing things with a camera. Look at somebody's work and you think, oh, that's a great picture, and then hear them say, you know, this picture is terrible, and, you know, just rip it apart for whatever reason. You weren't looking at their background, and this should be cropped out, and this shouldn't even be there, and yada yada yada. You're like, oh, never mind, I'd be pretty happy to take that picture, except not anymore. So there are established greats in photography past that you can study their work and understand that they were amazing at seeing things before they happened in order to be where they are to take the picture and try to be that good. But the real value of a picture comes from whoever's looking at it, so...
As I think about those ideas of value and what makes a photograph good, I'm reminded of a few photos that I've taken. One of them is on the wall of my office. In fact, it's right above me as I record this podcast. It's a group of children in Nigeria standing together and eating orange slices. Another is a photo that I took after the 4th Infantry Division returned home from Iraq. And during the closing ceremonies, as they're uncasing the flag and doing a lot of the ceremonial stuff for the troops returning home, I grabbed a photo of a soldier standing with his infant son on his shoulder watching these ceremonies. I have a number of these photos. They're just really random moments in time that just became some of my favorite photos. They weren't really planned. They just happened the way that they happened. And so each of these photos tell a different story, and they take me back to these moments instantly. So before we wrapped up, I asked Don to tell me about his favorite photos as well.
Well, obviously there's a bunch of Joshua, my son, that I found one the other day. It was like, oh my goodness, he was small. I mean, I didn't realize how small he was. So those have personal value. As far as an actual picture, one that jumps out of my mind is, you kind of get lucky on some, where you go, the light was right and the subject was perfect and everything happened there that I was not even paying attention to that I should have been, that still worked. And so there's a picture of a kid riding a horse at a youth rodeo event, and he's riding toward the door of a barn, but you can't really see it in the picture, but the barn is reflecting all this light back on his face. And so the light on his face is perfect, the horse is there, the saddle, there's some colored rope, and there's all these little things that come together to make it just perfect with this kid, little kid on a big horse, cowboy hat. And that always is just one of my favorites. The other is shooting for the paper. Not long after I started working at the Tribune, we had two soldiers die in Afghanistan within a month and a half of each other. And then we had another accident with three girls who got hit by a car. This was in a couple months, and not long after I started working there. So to kind of be thrown into a situation where I'm green, and all of a sudden I'm a photographer at a soldier funeral was just killer to me, to be the guy with snapping pictures, right? And you start thinking about the value of the picture to the community as a whole, and sort of, and within that time frame I took some pictures that, you know, really, I think, shared the experience with the public that I wanted to do. So just coming into that situation completely out of my league and being able to take some pictures I was proud of for that moment and being trusted by the people, the families, pulls together a lot of emotional things for me that really make those some of my favorite pictures, even though they were the hardest to take. So,
well, and I'm thinking too, so you cover these funerals. You recently covered the funeral of a Dallas firefighter that passed away as well, that was killed in the accident. When you're covering those events from a photojournalism perspective, are there certain shots you may take and you're saying, I can never share this with the family, or I can never do this, or are there shots you're like, I can't take that shot?
There are those at, say, crime scenes that you may end up with a picture that you can't show anybody, or that you shouldn't show anybody. It was different at funerals because I was doing it for the paper, really.
Right.
I don't want to take a picture of a mother crying when she's being handed a flag, but I took it anyway because it was for that purpose of sharing this experience with the public in general. So I think it forces you journalistically to do something that may be uncomfortable, but it's not something you wouldn't share. It's because you want to share that you take it. There were some situations, I guess, where I felt incredibly intrusive. But like even Scott Tanksley graduated from Kemp High School the year I was a freshman. So it was actually some mutual friends who asked me to be at that. It wasn't for work, even though I'd shared the pictures. But I look back at those other experiences when I was working for the paper that prepared me to be in a funeral with a camera. So, I don't mind taking pictures at a funeral anymore. if there's a value in it to the family, right? So, you know, or to the public, I guess. But it definitely changes how you feel about being a part of something like that, that you don't want to intrude in a private moment. But some of those are not private moments, other really public moments. So, I don't know. It's hard to say. I try to put myself in the perspective of the family that's there, and do I want somebody taking pictures of me? Ooh, maybe not. Maybe not.
So that's it for this week's episode of the Something Beautiful podcast. Thanks to Don Johnson for joining us this week. We have a lot more of our discussion that we talked about. We talked about some of his preferences in photography. We talked about Photoshop and graphic design, and is that really true photography? And if you want to hear some of that discussion, you're welcome to do so. We have the full interview posted on our website, somethingbeautifulpodcast.com, and you can download that and listen to it at your leisure. Our theme music is, as always, An Owl Named Orion by danosongs.com. We also had some backing music in our conversation from the nice folks at St. Arbucks, who also provided some warm coffee dinner interview, and I use that term provided loosely. We still had to pay for it. We also have featured some tracks from the We Are All Ghost record label. If you haven't checked that out, that's Thomas's new project. He also has a really cool podcast that he's been doing, and he's got, I think, 10 episodes or so that he's putting together, Circumambient, and you can find that on iTunes, or you can go to his website. We'll have links to that all on our website, somethingbeautifulpodcast.com. We thank Don for joining us this week, and I hope that you've been inspired to think about photography in maybe a different way, to think about telling stories in a different way, and to think about how we assign value to things like art and to creative pieces. So I'd love to hear your thoughts. I'd love to hear your stories as well. Be sure to drop us a note. You can do so on our blog at somethingbeautifulpodcast.com or email us somethingbeautifulpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, we tweet at SB Podcast and hope you'll join us again next week for the Something Beautiful Podcast, Stories Worth Talking About. I'm Jonathan Blundell. Have a great week.